With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Keith Simons has a long history of coaching football and specifically quarterbacks. The 1976 Washington State High School Football Player of the Year at Federal Way High School, went on to play his college ball at Oregon State, and then compiled a 36-year coaching career in both junior colleges and in Division II as a head coach and coordinator. And later opened his own quarterback coaching school and tutored some quarterback prospects privately. Recently retired, he has launched the YouTube channel Quarterback Unfiltered, where he lends his insight into the ins and outs of playing the position. He interviews some legends, including some of the best Seahawk quarterbacks of all time, and even breaks down some of the draft prospects. We're getting into that a little bit today, as well as his thoughts on the Seahawks' current quarterback situation and what he thinks of the guys that are projected to go at the top of the draft. Keith Simons of QB Unfiltered joins me today, up next on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
All right, you guys hit that like button on the YouTube channel, the bell, so you always get notifications of new episodes. And of course, subscribe to the channel. If you prefer audio podcasts, just subscribe there. That way you won't miss out on any episodes. And if you want to get rid of those pesky ads and listen to exclusive episodes ad-free, you can do so on Spotify. You can subscribe for less than $1 a month right now. Or you can just buy me a coffee or a beer. Those links will be in the description, as well as links to my guest's YouTube channel. Keith Simons came on my radar a couple weeks ago, actually reached out to me and let me know about a couple of interviews he did with Dave Craig and Jim Zorn. And we got to chatting, got to go down memory lane a little bit, talk about the early days of the Seahawks. But I also wanted to talk to him about the quarterback position. Certainly a big focal point of this draft. It's always a focal point among fans when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks, who our quarterback is, who it should be. Might they still be looking to take one in the first round or thereabouts in this draft? And if so, who might be a good match? He's got some great stories, a lot of insight. Let's get right into it. This is Keith Simons of QB Unfiltered. All right, welcome into the show, Keith Simons. I've been looking forward to this one for a couple of weeks ever since you reached out to me and I got familiar with your work and what you do. Keith, thanks for taking the time.
Appreciate it.
We're going to talk a lot about quarterbacks today. That's obviously your area of expertise. And specifically, I want to talk about some history too, because you've got some great stories. And if you haven't checked out his YouTube channel, QB Unfiltered, definitely do that. He's got a long form interview on there with Dave Craig. He's got another one with Jim Zorn. So growing up, you know, relatively in this area, attending college at Oregon State, you were a Seahawk fan, right? Back in the day.
Yep.
Who was your, and maybe you've already kind of given it away by your channel, but who was your favorite quarterback back then with the Seahawks, back in those Kingdome days that we were chatting about before I hit record?
Well, I was a senior in 76. And
that's when they were born.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it didn't take too long to figure out that Zorn was going to be something special, you know. And I was a left-handed quarterback. And I wore number 12 for Kenny Stabler in high school. And I ended up wearing number 10 in college for Jim Zorn.
There you go. All-State Player of the Year that year, 1976 at Federal Way High School. So yeah. We're now, stylistically, how did you compare? What kind of quarterback were you? Were you more of a drop-back guy, or could you run around a little bit like Jim?
No, I was Kenny Stabler all the way. Yeah, all the way. It was, I could throw it. I couldn't run.
Okay. I was the opposite. I stopped playing quarterback my junior in high school because I couldn't throw. I could run. I could scramble a little bit, but I couldn't throw the ball over 20 yards. I had to kick it to get it that far. You know, we started chatting a little bit, and I told you I wanted to save some of the bullets for the show, but talk about those early days, because I told you, and I've said it on the show here, Jim Zorn was my first favorite player. Like, you know, when it came time to do some Seahawk themed tattoos, I went with Largent just because of his greatness. But Zorn was the guy. Number 10 was my favorite player. And he had such a unique style, and was really, you talked in the interview when you had him on your show about how he was ahead of his time. We see mobile quarterbacks now, but even when he came along, nobody had done it the way he was doing it. What made him so unique?
Yeah, well, you hit the nail right on the head. He was unique. You know, he could throw it and run it. And any NFL team that has blitz checks in their arsenal for QB draws, like the Seahawks did, that's saying something. And he could hurt you in so many ways. I mean, he was very accurate. He could deal the ball, but when he pulled it down and ran with it, he was a weapon. And he was a man of the people. I mean, when you drive up to a game in a yellow Volkswagen and you park in with everybody else, and you walk into the stadium with the rest of the crowd with a Hall of Fame receiver next to you, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He was just a down-to-earth, cool dude, and he was different. He was totally different. There wasn't anybody else like him in the NFL. It was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the reasons he connected with so many people. And I also have thought before that maybe that's one of the reasons that it just wasn't a great fit for him to be a head coach in the NFL. It seems, especially nowadays, that you almost have to be larger than life in order to command a room like that. Do you think maybe his personality just didn't fit that role?
Yeah, you know, he's really knowledgeable as far as coaching quarterbacks. And I didn't really get into his philosophy too much as far as offensive coordinators go. But I know he knows what he's doing coaching QBs. And certain coaches just have a niche, or a, however you say it, they've got that area in which they really excel in. And being a head coach is a different animal. You know, there's not a lot of coaching going on when you're the head coach. It's a PR thing, and it's a deal with the media type stuff, and you let your assistant coaches coach. So I'm not sure that Jim was ready for that job. It kind of came upon him faster than what I think he was ready for.
Yeah. Caught us all by surprise, including him.
Right.
Another thing that fascinates me about that era, and again, I'll put the link to that episode and the Dave Craig one as well in the description here for those of you who want to check it out. He talks about something that I didn't know really until today, was that wasn't just a Jerry Rome scheme that he applied universally, that they created that scheme specifically to fit his skill set. That's a conversation I think that in this day and age we're having more and more, because it didn't used to be that way, right? These coaches were stubborn. I've often said on the show that I think it was kind of the downfall of Mike Holmgren is he just reached a point where the league had evolved and he didn't adapt his offense because he wasn't willing to. How much of coaching in this day and age when it comes to quarterbacks is trying to fit a guy into a system, or trying to tailor a system to a quarterback? Because I'm sure each has its unique challenges.
Yeah. You know, in the NFL, you can go out and get a guy to fit your system. The problem you run into is when you've got an established quarterback and you bring in a new coach, or you've got an established coach and you bring in a new quarterback. And it's definitely a problem if you've got a guy that's, you know, set in his ways, and he's got a QB that has a different skill set, and you don't use his skill set to your advantage. That is definitely a problem. But, you know, the best way to do it with coaching quarterbacks is whatever your quarterback does well, you have to tailor your offense to that. I call it QB-friendly offense, and it's amazing how many coaches don't subscribe to that. where you're trying to force your guy to do something that he can't do either physically or mentally or both. That's just a recipe for frustration.
And I mean, every quarterback has flaws, right? Even the great ones. I mean, as a coach, there are certain aspects of the playbook you lean into, and there are certain things you want to stay away from, right?
Oh, for sure. Like I said, you play to your QB strengths. And if your guy can't make certain throws, then don't call those throws, you know? And it's, as I said, it's always amazed me that coaches will bang their head against the wall trying to get a guy to do something they want him to do when he can't do it. Play up to your quarterback's strengths, you know, use what he has to your advantage.
It was certainly something that Seahawks fans saw for 10 years when it came to Russell Wilson. Another quarterback that just came to mind as you're describing that, he's been a big topic of conversation here the last couple of months, is Michael Penix, a guy who obviously had the great two-year run at UW the last couple of years, has put himself in a position where now it appears he's firmly in that first round conversation. You did a video about him. You like him a lot. And yet there are fans who will tell me anytime his name comes up, he can't throw over the middle. He doesn't throw over the middle. Is that an example of what you're talking about? As you watched him, is that something that you think was just a choice, or was that maybe a blind spot in his game?
Yeah, I don't think that's a blind spot. You know, sometimes it's just the way it works out, to where a quarterback, for whatever reason, you know, coverages that you're seeing, game plans for that week, opponents where you're not throwing a lot of balls over the middle. That's not a concern for me. My concern on him, my own personal, is I think he lets poor throws early in a game affect his game. I saw that all season long for him. If he missed some throws in the first quarter, I told my wife, I said, you watch, he's going to struggle today. And it was like, he couldn't pull himself out of that. That's just my opinion. I really love his game. He's well coached. He does so many things right that you don't see a lot of NFL quarterbacks that are starting right now do. And he understands the passing game. A lot of that has to do with the system he played in, the coaching he got. He's well coached, and he understands the passing game. He just has so many positives. I think he's really going to be a good professional football player.
There's a lot of Seahawks fans that would love to see it happen still here in Seattle, for him to stay, for the Seahawks to take him. I'm not sure that that's even up for discussion anymore after the Seahawks went out and made the move they did for Sam Howell. We'll see. Obviously, the offensive coordinator's here. Scott Huff, the offensive line coach, is here as well. If that were to happen that way, you know, because John Schneider's adamant about the fact they're going to take best player available on their board, you know, no matter what position, although he does factor positional value into that grade. If, let's say, because I know my viewers would want me to ask you this, if Michael Penix were the choice at some point in the draft to the Seattle Seahawks, is he ready to play right away, in your view?
I think so. I've said this on my podcast about some of the guys that are coming out right now, quarterback wise. The system that you play in college gives some of these guys a way bigger advantage than some of these other guys going in the draft. And the Dogs, that was a quarterback friendly offense and passing game. And when we talk system here and quarterbacks being ready to step in and play in the NFL, you're talking about the passing game and understanding concepts and reading coverage and anticipating throws and understanding spacing concepts and throwing receivers open, checking the ball down, which he does great, stands in the pocket, goes through his reads, boom, boom, check down. And there's a lot of guys in the league right now that don't do that very well. So I think based on the system and the coaching that he got at the University of Washington, I think he's going to be able to, and again, it depends on the system he goes to in the NFL. That has a huge effect on any quarterback. I mean, he could go to an archaic offense or a defensive head coach. Those guys are usually not real good for QBs and struggle. But everything that I've seen from him the last couple of years for the University of Washington, I think he's going to step in and be a guy.
There's so much I want to get with you about this. Talking about quarterbacks, one of my favorite subjects. It's just, and it always appeals to the viewing audience because it's the focal point, obviously, of what we watch every Sunday, every Saturday. We'll shoot every day of the week now. Why is it such a difficult evaluation? I mean, you did a show where you talk about the one thing that you look for in trying to determine whether or not a quarterback succeeds or not. I'll let you expand on that. But why year in, year out, and it's a big topic of conversation this year because we're having what is shaping up to be potentially a historic quarterback draft, maybe four in the first four, maybe five in the first 10. But those evaluations, the track record's not great. Why is it such a difficult evaluation to project those guys to the pros?
I think two reasons. Number one, in my opinion, I think you've got the wrong guys evaluating. If I'm an owner of an NFL team, the two guys that are evaluating my quarterback draft are my quarterback coach and my offensive coordinator. Quarterback coach and OC. Not the owner, not the scouts. Those are the two guys that know what they're looking at and know what they need. So I think that's a flaw, is you've got the wrong guys making the evaluation. And then the second thing is, I think a lot of NFL franchises evaluate and draft quarterbacks solely on physical ability. And there are four components to being a successful quarterback. Physical ability is one of them. And I think that is the only one that a lot of these franchises look at. And the other three end up getting them in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Traits. We hear that word all the time now, right? Traits. And you hear this in scouting circles. We look at what a player can be, not what they are. And this is a debate that's big among the fan base. I get into this all the time. There'll be an example of a player that I'll tweet out something, or I'll do a show and I'll talk about how much I like him. And fans will come back with, yeah, but he hasn't been that yet. You know, the Sam Howell acquisition is a great example. But he threw 21 picks last year. The guy turns the ball over. How do you balance that? It's such a fine line between what a player is today or what he has been and what you think he can be.
Well, and again, that goes back to having the right guys evaluate him. I mean, if you've got the OCs and the QB coaches evaluating college quarterbacks, I can tell by looking at a guy on film. I can tell by looking at any guy that's coming out this year in the draft, what I think he's going to project as, what his strengths are and what his weaknesses are. There are a lot of things that I'm going to see that are going to be either red flags, or they're going to be physical or mental. Just watching game film on some of these college quarterbacks, I'm going, ooh, this guy, I don't know about this guy, you know, and then he's going to be a guy that ends up going, you know, pretty high in the draft, and then he's going to struggle. But I mean, I think a lot of it has to do, again, with how they were coached in college, what they come into the league with mentally and physically, and then who's coaching them in the NFL. Because there's a reason why some quarterbacks are really successful in the league and some guys struggle that could be pretty good, but still struggle. There's a reason why on every Sunday you flip on the tube and you watch a guy take a drop and freeze like a deer in headlights on an obvious read and progression where he should have just been spitting the ball to the guy right now, and he holds the rock and holds it and ends up getting sacked or running. And it's like, what are we doing? You know, but getting back to evaluating the quarterbacks, I use this as an example in one of my shows. Tom Brady in the combine, who looked like a frat house guy that just walked out of a biology exam.
Yeah.
In his picture.
He'll never live down that combine footage. That lives forever.
But all you had to do was sit in a meeting room with Tom Brady at that combine for 5 minutes to know what kind of fire, drive, smarts, heart he had. It's a no-brainer. But everybody missed him.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's what John Schneider refers to as tilting the room. It's a quality that he looks for in a quarterback, a guy who has that kind of first impression. There's all sorts of differing opinions on the top guys in this draft. And as I said, it's looking more and more like this thing might end up with quarterbacks going in the top four picks. As history would suggest, not all those guys are going to become franchise quarterbacks and work out. As you've looked at this class, who do you like? Who are you concerned about? Do you see any bust potential up there? What do you think of this class?
I like Michael Penix Jr. I like Jaden Daniels. And I like J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm.
See, I knew we had something in common. let's use McCarthy as an example, because this is one that I have had long debates with fans about, and in a very similar fashion to debates I had last year about Anthony Richardson. Not that I necessarily was a big Anthony Richardson believer. I just started to recognize early in the process that the NFL guys in the NFL were going to like him, and he was going to go a lot higher than most fans believed. When you look at a guy like McCarthy, where he just wasn't asked to do as much in college as these other guys.
Right.
And therefore there is a perception among a lot of the fan base out there. And everyone considers themselves a home base scout now. Why do you like J.J. McCarthy? Why do you think he'll be a successful NFL quarterback?
Well, you hit the nail right on the head. He wasn't asked to be Superman in that offense, but when you watch him on film, he just does a lot of things that are really, really good, that are subtle things that the average person wouldn't really notice. Just little subtle pocket movements and his eyes and his poise in the pocket and just sliding to get into gaps to throw the ball. And he does all the little things, I think, right. But I think what's going to make him really good is the Tom Brady right here. Mm-hmm. Is this guy's a winner. He's a leader, and he does everything right, not only on the field, but in the locker room and off the field. And too many NFL franchises go back to just looking at physical skills. They don't look at what's going on off the field. They don't look at what type of leader he is going to be. And all of a sudden now you've got a guy that might be a problem in the locker room, might be doing some extracurricular goofy stuff off the field that hurts the franchise and the team. So there's a bunch of stuff that goes into this whole breakdown on these QBs. And I just think McCarthy's the guy that checks all the boxes. I really like him. I really like him.
Now, the two guys you didn't name are the two that are probably going to go 1 and 2 in this draft. And Caleb Williams looks pretty locked into Chicago now with everything they've done this offseason. And Drake May, the other one, the least experienced of all these guys at the top of the draft. What are your concerns about those two?
Well, I'll start with Drake May. I like him because he played for a guy named Phil Longo. Phil Longo was the OC at North Carolina before he went to Wisconsin. He's an air raid guy. Air raid coaches are good quarterback coaches. We get back to the spacing, the anticipation, reading coverage, all that kind of stuff. Throwing receivers open. But there's just some things with Drake May's game that I'm not sold on. I don't know if I can put my finger on it really. I think he does a poor job at checking the ball down. That's such a huge thing for me with quarterbacks. that's something that I was telling my QBs for 36 years is always know where your running back is and check the dang ball down. You know, let's check it down. Let's throw a 4-yard pass. Let that guy catch it and fall down for 4 yards, but he's probably going to catch it and run for 5, 6, 7, 8 more yards and move the sticks. That's what I love about Penix. You know, you watch Penix play and he's going here to here to here. And that clock is starting to run out in his head and he turns and spits the ball to his back on the swing and they move the sticks. And that's awesome stuff. But I didn't see Drake May do that a lot. And I just, I get nervous with guys that go, oh yeah, you know, he's Justin Herbert-esque. He's built just like him. And I'm like, well, that's good for Herbert. You know, I'm not sure how good that, you know, how much that helps Drake May out, but and I don't think that's any way to evaluate a quarterback because he looks like another dude. There's just, I'm just not sold on him.
Interesting that you used the term move the sticks a number of times, because one thing that occurred to me as you were talking about that and the ability to process and check down is a new favorite term of mine that I learned from Daniel Jeremiah, whose podcast is named Move the Sticks. And he first used it in reference to what he likes about Bo Nix. And he said, the dude never gets bored of completions. Just take the thing that's there. Right. And not enough quarterbacks do that. And I know that's been a knock on Caleb Williams that he felt he was playing from behind so much and then he had to play hero ball all the time. But, let's talk when you talk about Seahawks history, trying to combine all this a little bit, the Seahawks are maybe one of the most interesting franchises in the NFL in regards to their quarterback history, because the guys that have been the best quarterbacks were all overlooked. They were all unsung. You know, Russell Wilson was the highest drafted of all of the good ones, and he was a 3rd round pick. You know, Hasselbeck was acquired in a trade. I think he was a 7th round pick of the Packers. And then of course, Craig and Zorn. Craig played for a college that doesn't even exist anymore. It's, and yet they've taken 3 quarterbacks in the 1st round and they've all been among the biggest busts in NFL history, and Kelly Stauffer, Dan McGuire and Rick Meyer. Those 3 guys, when you look back on Seattle history, did any of those 3, were they all just true busts, or do you think any of the 3 could have succeeded if maybe they had been in a better situation?
Well, Meyer and McGuire, I wasn't sold on those guys coming out of college. I just wasn't. And again, it's getting back to Caleb Williams real fast. Chicago, I think, is going to fall into a trap that a lot of NFL franchises fall into, and that is being pressured by public opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're handcuffed. How long have we been talking about Caleb Williams going number one to the Bears, going number one to the Bears? If they don't pick him, the state's going to blow up.
Yeah.
I mean, people are going to lose their minds.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, well, geez, you know, maybe Jaden Daniels is the better pick, but if we don't pick Caleb, we're going to lose a bunch of season ticket holders or whatever.
It's funny you mention that, because I think that's kind of the trap the Seahawks fell into in, what was it, 91 or 92, when they just had decided they needed to draft a quarterback. And because unfortunately they beat the Patriots that year for their 2nd win, they lose out on Drew Bledsoe and they went with Rick Meyer. It was almost as if they had just predetermined that was a need that they had to address and they were going to do it no matter what.
I think, there's also a lot of quarterbacks that have benefited getting drafted basically based on the school they play for. Mm-hmm. The Rick Meyer Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. You know, you got these guys that are playing for these iconic universities that are talent wise, but they get picked, they get selected. And again, it's amazing to me the mentality that some of these franchises use in selecting their quarterbacks. I mean, get your quarterback coach and your OC in the room and have them select the guy that's going to be the best guy, not the guy that played at the big time school or the guy that had the fancy stats or played on TV the most, the guy that's the best quarterback, you know, and that could be a guy that played at Milton College, right?
Yeah. like a guy who coached at small colleges. You probably along the way had some guys that you coached that you thought were overlooked by the league.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I had a young man named Adam Frohman that played for me at Santa Rosa Junior College, who was the California State Player of the Year, which California Community College football is the best in the country. And when you're the State Player of the Year, that's saying something. And here's another thing about evaluating quarterbacks. Adam Frohman had one scholarship coming out of high school. He was a local kid. He had one scholarship. He ran option football in high school, and his scholarship offer was by Sac State to play DB. Okay. Wow. He came and played for me at the JC. He sat behind Greg Alexander, who is the all-time national JUCO record holder for touchdown passes. Went to the University of Hawaii to play after Colt Brennan left. Adam Frohman backed him up and played for me, led the nation in passing, was a State Player of the Year. And here's a kid who had one offer coming out of high school that nobody recruited, that goes to Louisville as a two-year starter, takes them to two bowl games, beats Notre Dame in one of the bowl games, and then goes to the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, Frohman would have stuck in the NFL, but he didn't like the coaching there. He just was disillusioned with what was going on, and I don't want to get into it, you know, in any details, but that's a guy that could have played. Greg Alexander could have played. He was 6'5", 235 pounds. Oh, wow. And had a devastating knee injury against Louisiana Tech when he was a senior at Hawaii. He had seven knee surgeries on it. Still not right. So yeah, I had some guys, and you know, for whatever reason, it didn't work out. I also know that if Adam Frohman played at Notre Dame, he probably would have gone in the second or third round of the draft instead of being a free agent for the Atlanta Falcons. So
what are your thoughts on the current Seattle quarterback situation? Geno Smith has been a polarizing guy, even among Seahawk fans. Some feel like they should have moved on from him this offseason. And others feel like there's still some untapped ceiling there and that the Seahawks can win with him. What are your thoughts on Geno?
I think he's going to benefit from the new system coming in. I like his feet. Again, he played, you know, Dana Holgorsen at West Virginia, yeah. An air raid guy, yeah. Understands the Mike passing Leach game. He's got really good feet, which puts him in the upper echelon of NFL quarterbacks, because a lot of those guys don't. Every now and again, he has some questionable, not decisions, but just anticipation on some throws. I think that his game's going to be elevated by the new staff coming in with the system and the coaching. I mean, they've proven what they can do. Or what's the OC's name?
It's Ryan Grubb.
Yeah. He proved what he could do with Penix Jr. And Penix Jr.'s coached. He's coached. And so, you know, I think Geno is going to really benefit from that. And I like what I see from him. I think if he gets consistently solid coaching with anticipation and all that stuff tied in with the good feet and rhythm that he has on his throws already, I think he's going to do all right there. Sam Howell.
Yeah.
As I mentioned to you last week, I find it interesting that, and I don't know how much contract and salary cap and all that has to do with him leaving Washington. I just found it interesting. As soon as Kingsbury came in as the OC quarterback, that Hal was out. So, I don't know if that played into it or not. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I want to ask you a coaching question, because one thing that came to mind as you're talking about Geno is, you know, you talk about the decision-making aspect of it, and he has been inconsistent there. There are times where he looks like an all-pro. And then there are games like we saw in Cincinnati this last year where, you know, there's examples all over the tape of guys wide open downfield for touchdowns, and it looks like the stripe on his helmet's pointed right at him. Then he's looking at him, he sees him, he pumps there, and he's got protection. He can't pull the trigger. After a game like that, when a quarterback just seems off, as a coach, how do you handle that?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, I mean, if he's actually making the reads that he's supposed to be making that tells him that this is the guy he should be throwing to and he's not pulling the trigger, you got to find out why. You got to find out what he is actually seeing out there and what's going on in his head that's causing him to do that. That's the first thing you got to do. Yeah. You know, when it's that obvious and he's not pulling the trigger, you better find out what he's thinking. And anytime you have dialogue with a quarterback, it's got to be honest dialogue. So you as a coach are honestly coming at your QB, but he better be honest coming back with his responses to you so that you can get it figured out and corrected. You know, that's not a good thing. And the first thing, you know, if I hadn't ever watched him play, I would say, well, I'll bet you that he started to feel a little bit of pressure in front of him and his eyes came down to the rush, you know, but watching him on tape, I don't think that's what he does. I think he keeps his eyes downfield and just senses what's going on, you know, a peripheral vision and just feel. I don't think he's one of these guys that drops his eyes down. So yeah, I don't know why he does that. The concerns that I have with him, like I just watched him again this morning. They were running, I don't remember who they were playing against, but they were getting a cover two and they ran their right slot receiver on a bender route, which is a quick post over the top of the slot defender. And it was obvious that this guy's, I mean, the safety was deep and was bailing out on the snap. It was obvious this bender was going to be open as soon as he started to make his break, and he was open, he was open, he was open, he was open. And Geno finally threw it. He was looking at him the whole way and he finally threw it, but it was like two or three late. Ticks late.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of things that if you do have a safety that's hanging around a little bit on the hash, those are the kind of blow up shots where the receiver gets, you know, lit up and it's incomplete, where it should have been an easy completion if we're throwing the thing on time. You know, yeah. I didn't see that a whole bunch with him. You've seen him a heck of a lot more than I have. I'm not sure that that's a big problem for him. Is it? With anticipating?
It got better as the year went along. I mean, after that, it took about another week or two after that Cincinnati game. The Baltimore game was in that same time frame too. And the whole team just got their ass kicked on that one. But it was second half of the Washington Commanders game. Something seemed to click with him and he got quicker in his processing and getting rid of the ball the rest of the year. And I thought he finished the year really strong. I mean, I've had people argue that with me. But I remember the Pittsburgh Steelers game, which was such a debacle for the team as a whole because they couldn't stop the run and they just got shredded defensively, but had a chance to win just because I thought he was playing out of his mind down the stretch. So, you know, given that quarterback situation now with the, you know, they've made the firm commitment to Geno now verbally and financially, at least for this year, And then they go out and get Sam Howell, a guy that John Schneider's admitted he's liked ever since the draft process when he came out, and that that might be their long-term guy, that the need or the possibility of them taking one of these guys high, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think there's any way. Unless something crazy, an Aaron Rodgers type fall for one of these guys in the draft, which I don't anticipate. Have you had a chance? Is there anyone that's popped for you, maybe kind of off the radar, that maybe on day three they could pick up that might be sort of an interesting, fun, developmental toy?
No, not day three, but I'll tell you who I like that no one's really talking about, and I like this guy a lot, is Bo Nix. I like Bo Nix a lot.
He's kind of getting lost in all this discussion these days.
Yeah.
What is it you like about him?
Well, you know, we talk about the four things that I think that the NFL should be evaluating quarterbacks on: physical ability, mental ability, the leadership skills. And I call these miscellaneous, and another term for miscellaneous is drama, nonsense, and bullshit. That's the stuff off the field. Bo Nix checks all the boxes, physically, mentally, leadership wise, and there's no drama, nonsense, and BS with him. The fact that he didn't opt out of a meaningless bowl game speaks volumes about his character. And that, with his physical ability, is going to make him a really valuable commodity in the NFL, I think, you know. I just really like him. I like his swagger. I just like the way he plays. I like everything about him, and he's flying under the radar. He's gonna be a nice pickup for somebody.
He does seem like he's the guy that's fallen. And again, maybe just because he's not the flashiest player. I thought up until before they traded for Sam Howell, I thought Nix would have been a fix and or a fit in Seattle. In fact, the first mock draft I did of this offseason a couple of months ago, I had him trading down, I think, and then getting him later in the first round. But interesting hearing your thoughts on him. He certainly fits, checks a lot of the traditional Seahawk evaluation boxes of overcoming adversity, you know, having to deal with the knee injury early in his career and being considered sort of a disappointment in Auburn and then changing schemes and all that. Interesting stuff. I wanted to do this because shortly before you hopped on here with me, you let me know that you have a particular history with a former Seahawk player. Most Seahawk fans would remember Cooper Helfitt, former Duke tight end, who was an undrafted free agent 2012, kind of bounced around on the practice squad for a little bit, but I looked him up again this morning. I think he ended up with 40 or 50 catches over a 4 or 5 year span with the Seahawks there. You coached him, and you said you have a pretty cool story about him. What's your experience with Cooper?
Well, I've got two, actually. The first one is, you know, he was a Marin County in Northern California high school kid. Hell of a lacrosse player. He went to Johns Hopkins on a lacrosse scholarship, right? And his high school quarterback came and played for me at the JC. And Cooper called me one day from Johns Hopkins and says, I want to transfer and play football. And that night I get a phone call from his dad who goes, Coach, can you tell me why my son would walk away from a full scholarship from one of the most prestigious universities in the world to go to Santa Rosa Junior College and play football? And I said, because in 2 years, he's going to go back to another prestigious university and he's going to go play professionally. And he went to Duke and, you know, NFL. He played for David Cutcliffe at Duke. David Cutcliffe was Peyton Manning's quarterback coach at Tennessee and Eli's head coach at Ole Miss. So when Peyton Manning had that neck surgery and nobody knew what he was doing for rehab or if he was even going to come back and all that, he had some clandestine workouts going on at Duke University that nobody knew about. And Cooper was one of the five guys running routes for Peyton Manning at this hush-hush cloak and dagger workout. And he called me one day and he goes, hey, Coach, don't tell anybody, but I'm catching balls from Peyton Manning. And he looks good and he's ready to go. Don't tell anybody. We're keeping this hush hush. And that was pretty cool. What a hell of a player that guy was. Yeah. I'll tell you what, he did some stuff at the JC that I'm standing on the sideline, which is the worst seat in the house to see anything. He's lined up in the slot to the wide side of the field. He catches an option route and wheels it up their sideline. And here comes their corner up to make the tackle. And I'm looking and I can't see it very good. And I see Cooper's helmet go up in the air and come down on the ground and keep running. And my receiver coach who's in the press box is on the headset with me. He goes, "Holy shit." I go, did he just, and he goes, "Yeah, he jumped over the top." This guy, the corner came up and was maybe, he was hunkered down a little bit, but not a whole lot. Cooper went over the top of his helmet and landed on his feet on the other side and kept on going.
Wow.
And he was pretty special. Yeah. Pretty special.
He's got a Super Bowl ring. So, you know, I guess the football thing worked out pretty well for him.
Yep.
Yeah. We started with Jim Zorn. We end with Cooper Helfit, Keith Simons. This was a lot of fun, man. We're going to have to do this again.
I appreciate it. I appreciate being on here. And absolutely. Thank you for the links to the interviews. I also have an interview with Kenny Mayne on there.
Nice.
On my podcast. Me and Kenny grew up together.
Okay. In Montana, yeah. Right?
No. Here in Federal Way.
I thought he spent some time in Montana. Or did he play at Montana?
No, he played at UNLV.
Okay.
We played on the same boys club football team together, and we were rival quarterbacks in high school. And
I miss those old days of ESPN when guys actually had some personality and could be funny and did more than just yell at each other and, you know, try to prove who has the hottest take.
That's a whole new story on itself. Right there. Yep.
We'll have to talk about some of the rest of your history next time we have you on. What are you working on currently for the show? What can the fans expect to see?
I've done breakdowns on Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and Michael Penix Jr. I've got one coming up on JJ McCarthy, and I'm going to do a bonus one on Bo Nix just because I like him.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a big show on how the NIL and the transfer portal is killing college football, in my opinion, and doing a big one on that. I have some really definite thoughts on that. It's not good.
All the coaches are fleeing. It makes me wonder if the pirate hadn't, if we hadn't lost him so tragically, not too long ago, if he might have fit into the NFL. I know you have a history with Mike Leach, and I want to talk to you about that at some point again, too. Obviously, I have a emotional interest in that as well. So
I've got my Mike Leach book up here right next to my Wazoo cap.
Yep, I see that. Not miss me. I always see the crimson, no matter how far in the background it is. So thanks a lot, Coach. I really appreciate you being on.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too.
Take care.
Well, that was a lot of fun, as I expected it would be. I could have easily stretched that one out another half an hour or 45 minutes or so. We talked for about another 20 minutes after I said goodbye, and could have gone on even longer. So we'll have Keith back on the show again. But in the meantime, definitely check out his channel. It is well worth it. As we move forward, make sure you subscribe to the channel on all the platforms so that you get new episodes as they come along. Working on rescheduling Jackson Bevins to come on here. And I've got some other cool things coming up as well. And certainly if there's any big breaking news, I'll react to it as quickly as possible. Although I think the Seahawks are pretty much done with free agency as we sit here today. About $4 million in effective cap space is left after all the contract details have come out. So as always, thank you for watching. Follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. I am Dan Vienz. This is Seahawks Forever. Forever and always. Go Hawks.